some of the memorable events, and a couple of three times Mr. Harrell has referred to that short course with you in journalism.
Yes.
It might not be that that's your, that that was the biggest thing that ever happened to you in 4-H, so we'll give you a chance.
Well, thank you, Wally. I think coming to the 4-H short course was indeed the highlight, or one of the highlights of my 4-H club experience. And out of that attendance, getting introduced to the North Carolina State University, which has meant so much to me through the years, and also getting introduced to the city of Raleigh, which I think is a special place. And among the courses we had, Wally, in this 4-H short course, in addition to journalism, which he mentioned, and Dr. Jeter, who was the teacher of it, there were many other courses. As I recall, we had music appreciation. And Dr. Stanley Smith from the First Baptist Church did this, and just a wide range of courses, and you could pick the one in which you were most interested. And I think during the course of most days, they took us to more than one course. And so I think this cumulative experience had a great effect on my life, Wally.
Mr. Harrell, it seems to me that, that here we're beginning to get some cumulative thoughts that all add up to one thing, that there were a whole lot of opportunities that 4-H gave youngsters.
Well, I'm quite sure that that's right. And while journalism meant a great deal to Rudy, to Carolyn Smith, she might not have been interested in that except that she would use it personally.
Glenn, what sticks out as this number one 4-H thought in your mind now?
Well, I think the fond memories that I would have would be the Nessus, the 4-H trips. But over the years, I have found as I've gone through school and in my adult life that the inner involvement with people, learning to work with people, for lack of a better expression, the esprit de corps that 4-H club members seem to acquire. And I think that North Carolina 4-H club members have something different than what a lot of the other states used to have when we used to go to the meetings of the various states. Seemed like that, Bannon, I come through there in the 50s, and I'm speaking from that era, that our leadership of the adults in the state did a lot to really mold the character of a lot of people. And there's not many people who could say that they'd be more indebted to 4-H than I. And I personally feel that I have a great debt to pay the 4-H program for its involvement in my life.
In other words, it has launched careers and it has set off all kinds of...
So basic, interest. You can't really touch it.
Yeah, it really is. Speaking of launching careers, Mr. Harrell, I was noticing here in a little history of 4-H that the year I was born, the Jane S. McKimmon Loan Fund was started to help 4-H'ers to go to college. Was this a milestone, in your opinion?
Well, it was. It grew into something bigger. I guess that was kept in, I don't know how long it kept in, but that was absorbed or combined with something else. At about that same time, there was a loan fund, Ao Xiao Loan Fund. But I do not believe that either one of those loan funds are in existence at the present time, are they?
Yes, sir. The Jane S. McKimmon Loan Fund is still in existence.
I beg your pardon.
and that's we're also using it each year.
Home demonstration room.
The Extension Homemakers and the Extension Agents both contribute
right.
to the fund, and girls are going to school now.
Well, that's great.
Money.
Rudy, was this sort of the beginning of the 4-H development and the foundations?
Yes, and indeed it was, Wally. The North Carolina 4-H Development Fund was created in 1959. Charter member of that board was Mr. Harrell here, and since that time, the fund has... collected or has raised in various ways or had income amounting to $1.6 million and has spent from those resources a little over $600,000, which has really meant a great deal in terms of the camping facilities, Carlton, and the
yes.
the awards and recognition, the scholarships and loans, and our share, North Carolina's share of the 4-H, the National 4-H Center in Washington, D.C. This fund continues to grow. We've had marvelous leadership. Mr. and Ms. Harrell gave us our first contribution, and one of the very fine assets of the fund now is the L.R. Harrell Scholarship, which has meant a lot and continues to mean a lot to young people who are interested in continuing their education in the university here or elsewhere.
Ed, have you had a chance to pinpoint any specific event that stands out as the most interesting or outstanding to you?
You know, having had the 11-year experience of working with 4-H Club here at the state level, working very close with Mr. Harrell, and developed a feeling of his being my daddy, my second daddy during those years. I really, in trying to go back to the years when I was in 4-H Club, I can think of the camping experiences in a general sense, meeting new friends and so forth. But I think the greatest enjoyment I have and thing memories that I have of that are fondest of me and are most prominent in my mind are those years in working with 4-H Club members like Glenn and others in developing their own talents and their own skills and seeing them grow into being men and women. And I meet one every once in a while now in my work that a Baptist minister here, a Baptist minister there, or someone's wife, a preacher's wife that now have their own families, some of them grown. And it's just, Mr. Harrell knows what I'm talking about. The joy of having worked with these people. The thing I remember the most and enjoyed the most in my work was when we used to have the 4-H Health Coronation out in the old Riddick Stadium. Mm-hmm. It fell my lot every year to work with the committee to put this thing on. And it would seemed like it was hotter back in June days, 104 and 107 degrees. I honestly believe it. And we would just simply swelter out in that sun. And the time we could get some pine trees cut and set up for backstage, they just wilt, you know. But it was a beautiful sight, and usually that stadium on the southwest side was full for those coronations. And of course, we later moved to Reynolds Coliseum.
It's pretty hot in Reynolds, too, on some of those.
You bet your life. I sat up with the guys with the spotlights, and it was hot up there.
Sure.
Some of the wonderful experiences in life.
You have any recollection of Ed's career over the years, Mr. Harrell, that you want to comment on? That is, we keep asking Mr. Harrell. He keeps giving us that look like, well, I'd rather not mention a couple of things.
Well, he has told, in part, the big story about his experience in 4-H, and when I think of Ed, I think of a whole family in 4-H. Those brothers that he talked about that won national awards, and he didn't because he went to the war, or we went to war in 4-H, and we did really while we were not holding club weeks and that type of thing. Our 4-H members were selling bonds. They were collecting scrap. They were producing food to feed a fighter. And but I always, somehow or other, when I think of Edmund, I think of the whole family down there, Ed. I remember the day when I went down for a family reunion and sneaked my tape recorder down there, and one real program that I picked up over the years was the singing of those boys with their father. Now, that's really good. If you want to hear it sometime, I'll bring it out.
I'd like to hear that.
I can tell you something I'm not proud of.
What's that?
The one thing that stands out in my mind that I regret, I always will, because it's a good moral to it. I remember being on the state seed judging contest one year. Sam Winchester was in our county, and Edmund Acock, and I believe it was Charlie Clark was handling our team at that time. But we had come to the fair to judge seed, and we had never had to deal with sweet potatoes. That was one thing we never had.
From Johnson County, right? You know, the sweet potatoes.
A little bit.
Yeah, that's a tea.
We had never judged sweet potatoes. And I remember Harold Peden, who's now a doctor, medical doctor in Wallace. He's in Burgall.
Right,
Dr. Harold Peden. And Wills Barnes Fowler from Johnson County. He's a farmer and merchant now up near Wendell. With three of us made up the Johnson County team, and now Will had had experience with sweet potatoes when we knew it. Well, it just so happened when we finished all the other seed judging in one part of the exhibit hall, they moved us down to where the sweet potatoes were in the same building that they're now located at the fair. And we stood on our own honor system. Well, we all judged and we stood around waiting for them to come pick up our scorecard, and Harold and I looked and saw Will's Barnes had his exactly opposite guy. We had ours exactly like, and his was different. And we switched ours because Will had had experience with sweet potatoes, and we lost it. We were right, and Will Barnes was wrong.
He just knew all about them except judging them.
Yeah, I've never been proud of that. But.
Well, you see, confession is good for the soul, Reverend, and we finally got out.
After all these years.
Maybe that's the reason he didn't win the National Honor.
Carl,
let me say to him here what I said to those of you who would come up for our final session prior to going to Club Congress and other places, and if you remembered, I still remember that. I think I said this every time to that group. I said, now, those of you who are lucky enough to go, remember that you're probably going because someone else stayed home. This is the boy who stayed home so somebody else could go.
Carlton, we've sort of saved you for last year for, you know, special reason that we pointed out at the beginning of the program when we were talking to you about your career in 4-H. What kind of thoughts did you have when you decided that you were going to replace L.R. Harrell as state 4-H leader?
I really wouldn't say
well,
that.
The first thing was obviously that you can't replace L.R. Harrell. You know, there will never be another L.R. Harrell in 4-H. He'll always be the Mr. 4-H because he brought it from the beginning to where it was the largest and strongest youth program in the United States. And was an awesome challenge, really, Wally, to even attempt to take over and keep things from flying apart somewhat. But fortunately, with a lot of good help from agents and other specialists like Ed Coates, who was a specialist with us in ag engineering then, we managed to keep it together, and things have gone along pretty well. But I had enormous respect for Mr. Harrell. The first time I remember him was at State 4-H Week also, and I gave a demonstration on formulating a dairy ration. I was in the state contest, and after it was over, Mr. Harrell was there and pointed out not a technical error, but a grammatical error on one of our charts, which made a real impression on me that, you know, it wasn't just enough to be technically correct, you had to be correct in all the other aspects of it. And I think one of the things that has been as important in 4-H throughout my own experience as a member and also as a professional worker in it was the kinds of standards that agents and others associated with it set for the boys and girls, and they kind of accepted those and attempted, therefore, to live up to them. And I think that's the sort of thing that's missing in the lives of a lot of young people today is they don't have these kinds of standards expected of them in a lot of cases, and consequently, they don't make the kind of effort that they would make if somebody showed that kind of interest in them and indicated that they were important enough to set some standards for them. And I'll always be grateful to Mr. Harrell and others like him who did this for me as a youngster, and hopefully we did it for some others.
I'm sure you did. Do you have any one single event or thing that you could point
out?
Well,
I can't point out one single thing. I mentioned State 4-H Week, and that was always a highlight, primarily well, not primarily, but partially because I got out of putting in the back of that week, Wally. That was a real break and relief. I also remember my first trip to Raleigh to be on a radio program in WPTF, yeah. Which sticks in my mind. I remember, Rudy, one of the classes that we had at State 4-H Week was a class, and as I recall, it was required of everybody to take the class in table manners. Yeah. And we went down to the basement of what's now Leaser Hall, and they had the table set up with all the silverware in the proper places, and I still remember some of the things I learned there, Mr. Harrell. But I guess the important things to me, or that made the most impression on me, were the recognitions and the encouragement that I got from adults during my time as a 4-H member. And the thing I remember strongly was I competed in the fat stock show at Rocky Mount, had a steer, and won third place in the district. And the old Cherry Hotel in Wilson bought my steer, brought it back to Wilson, and built a pen outside the hotel. And for a week, had it on display. And every afternoon after school, I got out of school, went over there, and stayed with the steer for about 2 hours. And they later slaughtered it, served it in the hotel, and had me back for a part of the meal.
How about that? You mean you could eat it, huh?
Didn't go down too easy, but I do remember it.
Yeah, that's great.
But one of the other things that sticks in my mind, and I guess had I known how important it would be later, I might not have decided to change job, Mr. Harrell. The greatest satisfactions that I've had out of my professional career in 4-H have come 2 or 3 years after I got out, and see these boys and girls who've gone on and developed and done so well and come back by and say, you know, we appreciate the opportunities we had in 4-H. It's meant something to me in my life. And I guess if I'd known it was going to be that rewarding for that long, maybe I might have still stayed on in 4-H.
But in your position, you are doing, carrying on, and in a position to continue that type of service. Don't ever forget that.
Carlton, when did the 4-H move out of the school to the community level? Was that under your administration?
No, started under Mr. Harrell's, and we tried to get it finished in the early to mid-60s, I guess, by the time we finally got it finished.
We call that in this book here the Great Transition. It started in the year prior to my retirement, and we were...
Started in 62,
and I retired 63 or 64, right. 63. And some of the counties were a little bit slow to take on. They didn't think that they could ever get along outside of the school system, and the reason they had trouble, they didn't follow instructions. And they were told in the very beginning, don't you go out of the school until you set up your community organizations. And without an exception, I think I'm correct in this, and without an exception, those counties that went out first had a hard time ever getting back into the swing of things in 4-H. But that was set up in a way so that they would go out on the community level and organize the community levels, and then they would switch the membership. And where that was followed, I think you'll agree that you'll live to see that plan did what it was supposed to do. But if there was any error in it, it was an error in not being ready, not having your house ready to move in when you move, if you know what I mean.
So it was a good idea. Does everybody think that was a good idea?
Oh, yes.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that, because that did more to strengthen the leadership in the 4-H program. And what it was doing there was twofold. It was to maintain the 4-H membership and at the same time develop adult leadership to be responsible for the 4-H program. And without that adult leadership, Rudy, we never would have gone over our goal on the $1 million 4-H development fund. It's the leadership, the development of leadership on the part of adult leaders in this community program is of equal importance as the continuing of the 4-H program. I think it was right. I think it still has great possibilities, and it would have to stay with it. And particularly was that true in that it just happened at the time it did. If it had happened any other time, it might have been different. But immediately following that, we had this segregation issue. Not telling us would we do so, but telling us you will do so and so. And we had our community set up, which helped in that respect. And if we'd been in the 4-H, I've often thought, what would have happened to the 4-H program if we had still been in the school system with all of the busing that we have coming up?
It would have been
difficult
to survive.
Instead of going to a 4-H meeting, they'd been riding the bus somewhere.
To survive.
But I still think that it may have had some casualties, if that's the right word to use, But in the, but the overall, I think it was, I still believe that it was the thing to do.
Well, I think we could justify, Wally, the investment in 4-H for the benefits to adult leader training, if nothing else. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
One of the great thrills of my life was to see a wife of a young soldier from Fort Bragg who participated in a what we called a 4-H expansion seminar up at Betsy Jeff Penn. Emily, you may remember that period we went through of trying to really move out. And this young lady presided at one of the sessions up there. And I would judge she was a lady in her probably mid-30s, stationed at Fort Bragg, and she had gotten active in 4-H as a leader. And she did a just magnificent job of presiding before a fairly large audience. And she told me later that two or three years before, when she first became involved in 4-H, she said, I would have been afraid to stand up in front of that crowd and even tell my name, much less preside. And think of what that has done for her for the rest of her life and the impact that she'll have on just thousands of people as a result of that training development.
Well, there's one thing that hasn't been mentioned, and if you'll pardon a personal reference here, the well, because of the 4-H program in North Carolina, the Army and the U.S. Department of Agriculture asked the dean if I could go to Austria and help to set up a 4-H program in Austria. And their respect over there for 4-H and their appreciation of the type of the organization we had here to the extent that they asked for permission to print in German the North Carolina 4-H handbook for use in organizing and promoting 4-H in Austria gave me just a little bit of a balloon feeling to think that people in other parts of the world appreciated what 4-H was doing in North Carolina.
Well, this is an honor that is justly deserved, and you have had so many. We could do about an hour's program talking about the things that you have accomplished, but I want to ask you a personal question. Were you jealous of Carleton when he took over from you? Were you reluctant to retire?
No one ever asked me that question. I was not, from this point of view, after they had apparently given up on some other cases, they've asked me who I would recommend. And I said, you can just take the 4-H staff. We had over 100 years of service on the 4-H staff while I was there. I said, you can throw them up and catch whichever one you can on the way down. Either one of them will do you a good job. They said, we are not going to fill that position with anyone. The university will not allow it unless they have a doctor's degree. I said, well, I have one recommendation. Maybe you never heard this, Carleton. Said, who? I said, Carleton Blaylock. Well, they said, we've just made him district agent. I said, well, that shouldn't hurt him. That should help him. Said, well, I hadn't thought about that. And said, well, it'd be a demotion for him. I said, it wouldn't if you'll give him the title of assistant director, which he should have. Well, I said, I don't see any objections to that. Next thing I knew, they had employed Carleton Blaylock to take the job. And I did recommend you, Carleton, and pulled for you as hard as I could. And I pulled for you as hard as I could ever since without trying to get out in your way.
Well, I think it's a wise choice.
No, I still haven't answered your question. Until the Lord takes away my last breath, I'll always be thinking about 4-H and wishing that I had an opportunity to do again some of the things that I tried to do.
You know, I believe that. I think everybody in this room does, and we're grateful for it.
Right.
Emily, a while ago, Carleton said something that I need to ask you this question now about the table manners course. Could you get away with that kind of thing today?
Well, I don't know. Need to have some training in that. There's a great need for it still. We might have to approach it in a little bit different way than was done during Dr. Blaylock's training, but I think that we still have that need for training.
A lot of people question that if I may butt in here again.
No, you're not
butting. I was talking with Ms. McKibben and some of them about this. I asked Mrs. McKibben about this. She was my mother, so to speak. And she said, oh, I think that would be wonderful, and we'll see that somebody does it the way it should be done. That was Ms. McKibben. But something that was needed on the part of many of these boys. Well, when I left home for the first time, I didn't know that you had all these utensils to use around the table that you had, that we have now. And many of these boys and girls coming here to 4-H weekend, to come into camp, as I well knew, that was one of the basic needs for better living. And you remember how we used to say on the 4-H program when we signed off, 4-H trains farm youth in the art of better living. And that's our story today, and so. Well, I haven't found a person during the time or since that time that did not appreciate the fact that we planned something that would help them. They were up here for the first time with boys and girls together. Well, the boy didn't want to even be embarrassed by eating with his fingers, and that type of thing. It was a real course. It was something based on their needs, and incidentally, that's been the secret of 4-H all of the time, and what I tried to tell agents. If we will base a program on the needs and within the ability of the young people to do, that's all we need.
Glenn, do you have any children?
No, I'm still single.
Okay. I do. I think I learned about it in school,
Don't worry, that always happens. I guess so contented that people think that I must be the father of 10.
Oh, I'm giving away. Mr. Harrell, we have about 10 or 15 more minutes here, and I want to just open this up to anything. Well, what I was really going to get at with Glenn and with anybody else was whether we have children, and if so, were they interested in 4-H, and would we like for them to be in 4-H? That's sort of what I wanted to get at. Carolyn,
I think Carolyn ought to tell us about her 4-Hers.
All right.
I have two growing 4-Hers at home, one 17, one 13. And I would say this is, I thought when I was an extension agent that this was the most important part of my 4-H career. But I've been a volunteer leader for about 13 years. That's important too. But when you have them under your roof 24 hours a day, that's the most important. And we have very much a 4-H family. Our pop was not a 4-Her in his younger years, but believe you me, he is now. He even bought a green truck last time.
Anybody else have any experience like that, Ed?
Well, we had one daughter. We have two girls. The oldest one's graduating at Meredith in just a couple of weeks, and she was in 4-H after we had taken a goner one year, and then we had a club in our community. Ms. Ray Ritchie organized a club, and she was a winner in the woolen sewing contest one year. And this 4-H experience she had those 3 years as a junior high helped her decide she wanted to be a home economics student at Meredith, and she's graduating and hoping to get in that field. She's trained herself in several areas, but found home economics job not very plentiful.
Anybody else have anything they want to say about their children in 4-H?
I have a regret that my children were deprived of the privilege of being 4-H club members, and all phases of it. I was kind of tight-fisted, as you people who served as agents, about the camp program. And as far as I was concerned, only 4-H members attended the 4-H club camp. And as much as some of them asked that my two come to the 4-H camp, I always said no. The only exception would be to the wildlife conservation camp, and there was one other, that was in particular, and one other that was sponsored by other than Extension. I allowed my youngsters to go to the wildlife conservation conference, and they still regret that they were not allowed to participate in the 4-H program, but they didn't live where they could have a project, they didn't live where they could attend the 4-H meeting, so L.R. wasn't going to let them go, and he didn't. Yeah, but I did take them to these independent camps.
Yeah, that's sort of like what they say about the cobbler's children, with no shoes. Yeah.
But I don't believe that there's a youngster in Well, it's kind of like Jim said about his dad in Rotary. He said, I knew a lot about Rotary before I ever got in it because of my dad, and I'm sure that he would tell you the same thing, that he knows a great deal more about 4-8s than a lot of people do because of his dad.
When my son was a junior in high school, and I think I probably talked to Dr. Blalock about this, he went to the Marine Science Week workshop down at Wilmington,
Harbor House, right.
At Harbor House, and I want you to know that now he is a junior majoring in Marine Science at UNC Wilmington. So this 4-H just keeps on mushrooming. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Does anybody else have anything they want to add? Just go right ahead and say something.
I'd like to get in here. I think we've hit around personal development, but I think we've all overlooked at the impact that Mr. Harrell, Carlton, and 4-H has had on the colleges in North Carolina. Agriculture in North Carolina was entirely different today than what it was when most of us came through. And I think 4-H really opened the horizons to most of us and got us out and showed us a new world. And these are the days before the 4-H Development Fund came along, and Mr. Harrell was beating the bushes. I know a lot of us are indebted to him for finding money to get us through school back before money became plentiful. And I think it's had quite an impact on our colleges, and really the enrollment has come a long way.
I've been, since I had this letter about this meeting, going back through my files slowly. But I feel like that I go back perhaps to an earlier date than anybody around this table, 46 years ago, 47 years ago, so on. So the first material I got to was the earliest. And in these letters that I've been looking over, this is just a few of them here, there was a tremendous correspondence back in that day between 4-H club members. Here's a letter from Miriam Powell Butts back when she was a 4-H club girl. Olive Jackson, who was conversed with me with Virgil Moss. I got a whole bunch of them in my file. And then there are letters that I found who come from other states who just picked up something in some 4-H club news about something that some of us did, and so we started corresponding. And so I began thinking a little bit more about this thing recently. Why all of this? And as I recall it, as I interpreted, Mr. Harrell and those who worked with him really made us feel like a family. We were close. We took up for each other. We shared with one another. And I think the family, the larger family, the 4-H club family, was a tremendous experience for me. And I think it was for a lot of these others. Connecticut, I just showed him a little while ago from Connecticut. Florida, Tennessee, Virginia, Iowa. I don't know how many different places, just because something got into Progressive Farm or something like this. And here we were, you know, we feel like we're kin, right? And congratulate you on your honor, tell me what you're doing, and so on. So I feel like that they encouraged us to not only develop a fellowship and a comradeship here in North Carolina, but to broaden our vision.
You know, this same thing exists now. My son, having gone to National Congress last December, he just hears from people from many, many states, you know, that he met in Chicago. But I think probably we realize this more at Christmas when we're addressing cards, and I'll say, well, this year we really need to cut our expenses a little. But then when I get the 4-H, I say, well, just the 4-H friends and the family. Well, since most of our family lives out of state, that takes a large hunk. But then here come the 4-H friends, and then especially our involvement with people in other countries. We've not only by having lived other places, but we've hosted, I guess, about 8 exchange students, and there just isn't an end to it. You know, when you start corresponding with 4-H friends, just like you say, you feel like your family's spread.
Rudy, you were going to say something?
Oh, well, I was going to tell a little story that involved two North Carolinians who've been so important to the 4-H program, and That was back many years ago. I was involved in a seed judging contest at Goldsboro. And all of us who were involved were invited as the luncheon guests of the Goldsboro Rotary Club. The speaker on that occasion was the then Commissioner of Agriculture, the late Carr Scott. And the announcer on WPTF, which carried it, was Graham Pointer.
How about that?
Very pleasant memory.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. All right, before we wrap it up, does anybody else have any memories or thoughts that they want to put on this transcript?
I don't know how much has been said about some of the early publications. I ran across in a letter in 1931 from Otto Jackson referring to the 4-H, Forage, F-O-R-A-G-E-S. And I just quickly turned to Mr. Harold while ago to ask him what it was. She referred to copies that I had loaned her. I wonder if Mr. Harold would... Could you share with us a little bit what this is?
To the best of my memory, that was what later turned into be the 4-H words, you know, the publication that we had at Club Week. Mm-hmm. You edited it one year.
Yes.
And I think that was the forerunner of that. It was a mimeograph publication, dealing with 4-H Club Week.
Club members have to get it up?
It was their publication. Mm-hmm. Just like this four-leaf clover or whatever.
I could not remember. Clover leaves, they call it. My copies because I've forgotten what it was.
Let's get Mr. Harrell, and y'all join in with me in the questioning when you wish. But Mr. Harrell, tell us a little bit about, you mentioned the four-leaf clover, which is the symbol of the emblem of 4-H, the logo, if you want to call it that. How was that chosen?
Well, in the selection of an emblem, they thought they wanted something that stood for good luck, and they thought 4-H stood for good luck, and the four-leaf clover was adopted as the emblem. And I can remember Club Penn said, you know, it started out with this one here. You see, you have an H in each leaf. I think maybe I have somewhere some pins with one or two, maybe three leaves rather than the four, which was an indication of the number of years that the member had been in 4-H. But that was it did go through an evolution, but there's nothing in this history about that. Your four-leaf clover, but it was adopted because four-leaf clover still does stand for good luck. And so they adopted that, and then they put the 4-H's in, the head, hand, heart, and health, and we fought for 10 years to keep putting the fifth one in there, and they finally gave up.
What did they want to put?
Home.
Home.
But then there would be no end to it if you put it all in there.
And would it change to the 5-H club, would it have?
That's the whole story. It didn't. Let's just leave it like that and forget that I mentioned it.
When did the motto come about?
Well, that came along... most of these things having to do with 4-H on a national level came as a result of the National 4-H Camp. The first one was 50 years ago this year, and I don't know why they didn't do something about it. I asked them 2 years ago to have a golden anniversary, and some of us would come back. But anyway, most of the things in this, on a national level, started with the National 4-H Camp in 1927. That was the first time that the state leaders ever assembled together. And I don't recall the number of states represented at that camp, but they were not all there. But, and as a matter of fact, I don't know of another soul who attended that camp except L.R. I was the youngest state leader in the United States at the time, and I guess now I'm the oldest one. But anyway... We worked out the pledge, and that was really something to get that all put down and finally adopted. But that was with the emblem and the motto and the pledge, and all of those things were worked out and put in what we see final in their present form, I'll say. As a result of that National 4-H Camp and the state leaders, for a long, long time, understand that they've changed their procedure now, but for a long, long time, we held a state leaders meeting at National 4-H Camp. And the one thing there that was born as a result of that was what is now your National State Leaders Association. We had such an organization, maybe not named as it is now, but we did have our chairman and our secretary. And the state leaders in attendance at the National 4-H Camp elected those people, and they were put on the, what do you call that, extension organization of policy?
ECOP.
ECOP. That's the way, there are many, many things happened as a result of National 4-H Camp. In the first place, it was the first assembly of state 4-H leaders, and it was also the first time that there was a national meeting, recognized as a national meeting of extension people. Now, the Club Congress is older than National 4-H Camp, but it was never sponsored by the Extension Service. It was sponsored by Wilson and the Chicago Livestock Group and those people out there. But the Extension did cooperate with them. I'm not saying that to take anything away from the National Club Congress. It has meant a great deal in the development of the 4-H program. But extension-wise, National Camp, the Extension Organization and Policy, is the official tie of the Extension Service to the services in the states and the state leaders organization and that type of thing.
Mr. Harrell, tell us what is the greatest thing that stands out in your mind in 4-H?
The greatest thing would be thousands and thousands of young people similar to the ones who are grown up now and parents and grandparents are seated around this table here. The greatest thrill of my life is to meet up with young people. Don't ever remember going to a meeting of more than 15 people. What somebody would come up and say, I remember you when I was a little 4-H girl. And I says, well, how is your grandchild? And that is not just once in a while, but it's almost a continuous thing. So that to me is the greatest thing, to feel that maybe I have had some influence in helping the young people in North Carolina, particularly rural people, when I worked with them, to make a better living for themselves and for their families, and to make this a greater state and a better state in which to live and to rear their children and to perpetuate 4-H in its greatest meaning.
Well, you might have been called Big Toby when you were a youngster, but you are Big Daddy now to us, because it has been referred to on several occasions, 4-H is more than an organization, at least in North Carolina, and I hope that other states can share in the same kind of feeling. But here it is a big family, and you are the daddy of more youngsters than anybody I know of. And so we owe you thanks.
Thank you.
You know, we could keep on saying that. But I do want to thank Emily Ballinger, Carlton Blaylock, Boyce Brooks, Edwin Coates, Carolyn Ivey, Rudy Pate, and Glenn Woodley for coming here and sharing some reminiscences of 4-H with Big Toby. Thank you, Mr. Harrell.
Talk too much.